Good evening and welcome to Spooky Points Articulated, a podcast about worms and the power of friendship. I'm Jimmy.
I'm Amy.
I'm Rob.
I'm Patrick.
Which leads us to the movie Occult.
It was about finding your heterosexual life mate.
Yeah, those two dudes. If I learned anything, if you make a friend, you can accomplish
wait,
anything.
Wait, you said hetero. Life.
Yeah.
Oh, wait, what do you mean?
I think they were his friends.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay. I thought you meant like one of them was a man and one of them was a woman. I'm like, that's not how this
is. It's like soulmates, but for bros.
Oh, okay.
You're describing a bromance.
I mean, yeah, that was a bromance.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It was a bromantic comedy for sure.
They only knew each other for a week, if not less.
I mean, I'm pretty sure like a week into knowing you, we would be willing to blow up some people together.
It all started with the grape soda.
But yeah, this movie catalogs the experience of these two bros, one of which is making a documentary about an incident that occurred in which a man went stabbing three people, two of which died, and one of them ended up with marks scarred into their back, and the one who has the scars on their back is our other bro.
The bromancy.
I think he was like Inno.
Yeah, Inno.
He was Inno. And fun note is that Koji Shirashi is the writer and director of this movie, and he's also one of the bros who's directing.
He's the director of the movie.
He's the director of this movie twice. It's impressive.
Just double directing.
Truly the Citizen Kane of weird slow burn worm movies.
But we found out in this movie they're leeches. They're not worms, they're leeches.
These ones are leeches.
But also worms.
A leech is just a worm with extra steps.
With more teeth.
I mean, this might be jumping ahead a bit, but that bite on the shaman's arm in Colt was very clearly a very large leech bite.
Mm-hmm.
So what if they're just always leeches and we've been calling them worms?
I mean, I think if what I've learned from weird Japanese, like, spirituality stuff is that some things can be kind of interchangeable because they have similar meaning and kanji and stuff. And I don't know if that's true for leeches and worms, but I'm just going to go out on a limb and say maybe it's something like that.
I mean, it makes sense for them to have similar connotations given long wiggly boy being a trait they share.
But one fertilizes the land and the other doesn't.
But if you have ghosts in your blood, the leeches will help you. Of this dude's slow burn movies, this was the slowest, burniest.
Uh-huh.
Like, I think we were 50 minutes in, and we were just getting to the point where, like...
Yeah, like, they've just been, like, hanging out, had a drinking party, and he went to work.
Was really, really rude and...
But I love...
Not so vaguely sexist against the one woman in the production.
But I love how they kept getting more out of him every time he got wasted. That was the secret. Throw this man, like, a few half-liters, and you can get anything out of him.
There's a tactic for interviewing people and documentary situations where if someone's a loner, you do reduce the distance between each other, like what the dude was like.
That's how you get more info.
Yeah, it's like the dude's weird offhanded rant, he did have a point that getting closer to the subject and opening yourself up means you get more information, because that is what Koji did throughout the movie. It's like, we're bros, you can tell me if you're gonna blow people up, I won't do anything.
Sometimes you become an accomplice.
Well, given that, you know, this entity wanted the whole thing filmed, it clearly was an entity that wanted for someone to push, for someone to want that info.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you're someone that's like, yeah, you know, I'm working on this documentary, but I'm not emotionally invested enough to want to be close to somebody to get that info, this entity is going to be like, no, 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 no. You need to be fully in this, you know.
There's also the question of, like, how much of Koji's decision-making were actually his own. Because they established really early on in the film that, you know, people were kind of compelled to visit this, like, vacation spot and
maybe the
just get murdered.
Maybe the entity was trying to choose a successor and it was just guiding people that were, like, attached to it.
Oh, it was orchestrating this whole, like, I believe that a good chunk of the people in this movie didn't actually have agency in a lot of their decisions.
It's like, I just have to be here, and then, this is the perfect guy. This is my guy right here.
Well, it ties really heavily into the whole religion aspect of this all, you know, because, you know, a lot of religions, you know, the way that people use it, the way that they speak to deride religion is say, oh, it's just a cult, you know, but it's like, yeah, but cults have like power, like, and it's interesting to me of like knowing at least like the Catholic religion and like, so the thing that makes Jesus, the Son of God, the thing that makes him holy, the thing that they, like, so heavily press upon you is that it's because he was perfectly obedient to God.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, like, what gave him his divine power was this perfect obedience. And, like, seeing it mirrored here in this way of, yeah, but what do you do if your God tells you to commit an atrocity, you know? Are you still going to be perfectly obedient? And does that make you a bad person if you're not?
Yeah.
I'd go to the gardening store and buy some fertilizer.
Because, like, thinking about it, because, like, the voice was telling him to, like, stay on mission. Because he mentioned that once, and, like, nobody kind of noticed it in the film. And those daily, like, miracles were probably just reminders you have a job.
Mm-hmm.
And something greater than you is watching what you're doing.
Mm-hmm.
And also, you know, if a guy's bullying you at work, I'll just hit him with a car in MED.
Gotta get that bread.
Gotta get that bread so you can turn bread into bombs. It's simple math.
See, that was a threat going, if you don't listen to me, I'll do the same thing to you. I'll get a bigger car.
Hey man, hell looked pretty hype at the end of that film.
They were jellyfish. What are you...
It almost looked like, it almost looked like the jellyfish party in SpongeBob.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Except No one was having fun here.
I mean, towards the end, SpongeBob wasn't either. It truly was hell.
Also, I do think that one of the wildest bits of this movie is that they go see Indiana Jones and the Crystal Skull.
It's like, man, I kind of wish I could see this movie again. And it's like, well, we don't have enough time. Do you want to just put it off towards tomorrow? It's like, no, I got to do it today. Maybe if I didn't see this movie, I would have had a different answer.
It's a catch-22, though, right? Because if he hadn't seen the movie, he wouldn't want to postpone to watch the movie.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Imagine if they only had, like, an hour and a half left and they found out this movie existed. It's like, do we go see it?
I mean, at that point, you just watch the movie and just set off the bomb.
But then you'd kill nobody because no one went to see that movie.
Well, I mean, one thing it did, like, remind me of, the Columbine shooters, before they went and shot up the school, they went bowling.
Mm-hmm.
You gotta do normal things.
It's weird how normal extreme actions can be once you've set your mind on them.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like that's just one of the things that Koji Shirashi is just really good at bringing to the table, where all of his films, not Sadako versus Kayako, because that's clearly a different animal, but like Noroi, Occult, and Cult so far, it's been mostly, this is normal things for the most part, and it just kind of escalates as you learn and uncover, and like, it's like these things that can affect us spiritually are just hidden right underneath society and always around the corner, and you never know when you're going to get entangled in it. And I feel like that's more horrifying than anything he puts on screen, because it almost makes these paranormal entities feel normal.
Well, they're always there and they're always part of regular life. You just don't know when you're going to accidentally run into one
and
become part of its agenda. Because normally it doesn't really care too much about you until it needs you for a certain purpose.
And it's also like so in line with like the Shinto ideas of gods and divinity. Mm. Like they are everywhere and nowhere. And things that you do can randomly catch their attention, and there's no rhyme or reason for it. And once they have their eyes on you,
uh-oh,
you get wormed, I guess.
This wiggly boy wants your soul.
The worm wins every time. Somehow. Well, not every time. Most of the time.
I wonder if he had a really bad experience with tequila. Like,
he's
drank
like, fuck this worm.
He drank the worm and he's like, I am a man possessed. I have never gone so far before.
I mean, there was one movie where he took a break from worms and did a moth, and then it's been worms since.
Didn't he do, didn't he do like a Slipmouth woman film?
Yeah, he
too?
Did like a couple like movies based off some urban legend, spooky ghosts.
I kind of want to delve deeper into this guy's works, like future.
Like next time we rotate around, I'm probably just going to pick Shirome, one of his other movies, and A Record of Sweet Murder. And Jimmy, I think that completes the block of like the found footage movies
look
he's
forward
done
to this in like what, 4 to 5 months.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Well, I love any horror movie that like presents itself as like a mystery to be solved, you know.
But I also love how every one of these movies has essentially been a documentary.
Yeah. I mean, he's really good at, because I mean, this is going to be about Noroi for a bit. But he's so good at presenting the actual atmosphere of Japanese entertainment within his movies and playing around with those concepts. Like, using variety shows and random talk shows to intersperse, like, his footage within Noroi was honestly just brilliant.
He's also good at the journalism part, because it's like going deep on my own, figuring this out.
Yeah, there's something very Ring about that, because it's so much looking at books and
investigating.
Newspapers and investigating. Yeah. Like, this is...
Well, it's people digging themselves into their own grave, essentially, because they decide to go too far. Because it's like, my curiosity. It's like, there's some weird shit going on, but I need to know. And then at a certain point, you're like, oh no, I'm part of the shit now.
Yeah. And that ties into the whole, like, how much of this is really their decision and how much is it that they're compelled to go look at this.
Like, at what point did you lose your free will to stop?
Mm-hmm.
Was there ever a point where you could just go, yeah, I'm done, bye? Or was it always just, no, you're going to follow through to the end?
I mean, there is the idea that you had no choice because you were always going to make the choices you were going to make, which, you know, you kind of see that kind of mindset in Juan a bit, where it's like, hey, if you entered the house in the future, so your haunting begins like
today,
a month before you went into the house, because you were always going to go into the house.
Time isn't real and everything is happening at once.
Yeah. You know, it's just fun things. But I can't say, like, after, especially after this month and watching all these, Koji Shirashi is one of the people on the short list that I would just love to have a conversation about. Just to, like, learn how he views fucked up bullshit. There is no other way I can put that.
The other thing that I feel like is interesting to kind of, like, just think about with this film is that the guy's adamant denials that he has any powers whatsoever, you know? Like, he's like, I didn't move that. I didn't cause that car to crash. You know, it's not me. It's this other thing. But it's like, I don't know that he would be so adamant to deny it unless it was him, that, like, somehow this being did give him special powers to do things in the world.
That's the fun thing. We don't really know. Yeah. We don't know if he had powers or if the worms are just following him fucking with people.
It's just, to me, he had the same kind of energy as when he was saying, oh no, I don't understand the voice, as when he was denying, oh no, I didn't do that. I don't have those kind of powers.
Yeah, because thinking about it, he was always, like, framing it for the camera they gave him. It's just like, I have a feeling this dude's going to get hit by a car.
Uh-huh.
I didn't do anything bad here.
I'm just going to keep following him.
And it's just like, all right, we're going to give you, like, $230. It's like, hey, you guys want to go get Korean barbecue with the murder money?
He got $230 and a week off the street. It's a pretty good deal.
Yeah.
I was impressed by the bomb.
Yo, the bomb-making scene was, like, the most buddy-buddy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then then the lady came back, and they were just panicking in that room. Man, the detonator was just sticking out. It's like, what if you accidentally pressed the detonator? Is this apartment gone?
Also him just, like, lying on the box with all the bomb components. It's like, just like, I'm just here.
I made a bed out of a cardboard box. She's like, uh-huh.
I love at a certain point she got super sussy. So I wonder if something else was compelling her as well. Because there was that weird guy on the street as well that was like, no, this is bad. You have a bad bag.
I mean, that's one of the things that's like a common thread through his work. Is there are forces of good, and they are almost always overwhelmed by the sheer tenacity of evil. Mm-hmm. It is always an uphill battle.
Or they're one step behind.
Yep.
Or seven steps.
So, the idea of good in Japan is good always has to be a step behind, because good has to be a reaction to the injustices of the world. And the moment you start acting before there's something to correct is the moment you become a tyrant.
Then you're the bad guy.
Exactly.
You become evil.
So good is always there in the nick of time and has to be there in the last second because it has to be a reaction.
As long as the world is functioning normally, it's fine. Thank you, Japan. So moving on from this, the next movie we watch is a fun, wild crossover. It was Kamen Rider O's versus Worms.
Birds versus Worms.
Yeah. I like it. It was a more condensed, simplified version of what we watched from a cult. And it was shamans fighting worms. Most of the shamans didn't make it out of this movie.
Of course, we're talking about another movie from later in his filmography, the movie called Cult.
You just pull the first OC out of the first movie.
With the OC being the worm. So, I mean, if you're familiar with Neroi, this has, like, a similar setup in that this is entertainers going to do an entertainer's job, and it kind of feels like, oh, we're seeing the filming of a segment that's going to air on a variety show, and you're going to, like, eventually see this footage with people reacting to it, and there being, like, interviews and stuff like that. But, unfortunately, we don't get to that point. Things go very badly. Dogs may or may not be eaten.
The dog dies.
Yeah, the dog dies.
The dog does die.
That never stood a chance.
There is a great what the dog doing moment.
Worm dog.
Worm. It was barking still.
I think it was suffering.
Yeah. Yeah, it was probably not great. I remember watching that scene of Colt with you, and you and Delene are like, who cleaned up the dog? And this was something like me and Jimmy talked about. I was like, there was no time for anyone to actually come into this house and clean up that dog.
Yeah, I'm thinking, there's like blood everywhere. There's a dead dog.
No one cleaned up the dog.
Either that dog's still somewhere in that house, or it's...
Maybe he's just a worm dog now.
Yeah, the worm's gotta have fun with the dog.
The one thing I can respect is the first shaman. He felt kind of uncomfortable at first and called for help. He was like, you know what? I'm confident in myself, but I just want a second look on this.
Well, like, a legitimate shaman would probably get called out to these variety shows all the time, and it's like, I gotta be professional, because I need people to take my profession seriously, so I'll go and do these things. And then one of the plates exploded, and a piece of it was in the girl's hand, and he's like, yeah, absolutely fucking not.
It's like, okay, this is a little more serious than I thought. Let me just call the guy I studied from. It's my master. I just want his opinion. He'll guide me through. Just, okay, cool. Everything's still good. Let's go.
He also,
he was humbled.
Like, Koji really knew how to, like, do power levels in this movie, weirdly enough. Because in the first exorcism scene, where things were going crazy and the dog got eaten, like, there's a moment where it's clear he's losing the spiritual battle, and he calls his master over the phone. And the dude just starts doing his chanting, and it starts working. And it's like, this dude exercised that over the phone. If he can't get the job done, we are fucked.
Mm. Call a priest, and he says, put me on speaker.
Hold my sacramental wine.
Also, that one girl very much didn't listen to the rules and ate a burger.
Oh yeah.
What was her name? Maji?
They zoomed in on her and she had a little something on her face. I'm like, oh god damn it.
Like, you had one.
That better be from fucking Amurice, I swear to God.
It's like, I love how she's part of like the group that like studies paranormal things, and they've all had paranormal like encounters in their lives on top of it. Okay, the shaman's telling you, please, for this night, just don't meet me, let's just do this thing. And she's like, nah, I don't believe it.
See, the thing is as a vegetarian, I'm like, this is the one thing that I'm like, maybe I could actually convince people. I'm like, you know, if you eat meat,
you might get wormed.
You could get wormed.
In more than one way.
If I've learned anything, if you eat meat, you get superpowers for all the wrong reasons. What do you mean? You get to meet Ankh.
I don't want to go super hard in the Ankh memes, because I don't know the percentage of people listening to this specific show who watch Kamen Rider.
It's too late. You have to watch all of O's before you can watch this movie.
But, Jimmy, I think you definitely have the best inflection when what must have happened for his casting.
Yeah, so this movie came out, like, the year after Kamen Rider O's ended, and I just feel like after that happened, Koji Shirashi was just like, bring me Ankh.
Bring me that bird.
Because it is pretty much the character from O's.
Like, the first time we see him, he's sitting on a counter cross-legged, and it's like, if this man had a popsicle right now, I wouldn't know that I'm not watching O's.
But he was so, like, cocky and confident, and it's like, at no moment was he not sure of himself. He was able to act like a little asshole because he knew he could handle any situation.
I mean, like, the whole idea of, like, I don't believe in any god, I believe in my own power, kind of insulates him from some of the things we were talking about in Occult, which is kind of interesting.
Yeah, because the way this world is crafted, if you take your power from a god, you can be manipulated either by that god or something else that's trying to fight it.
Mm-hmm.
And if you just believe in yourself, as long as you keep believing, you can at least fight whatever these outside forces are.
I'm thinking about how things work in Koji Shirashi's kind of world that he set up.
Uh-huh.
And you can tell that Neo isn't necessarily an opposing force spiritually to the things in the movie, because he's able to contain them and actually use them against other people. And he's definitely their enemy, but he's not someone who's incapable of using their own means against them.
Yeah, the demon cube.
Oh, the demon bomb.
Or the demon bomb.
Oh, another bomb!
He just wormed a bunch of people.
He told them to leave nicely, and they didn't leave. Thank you, weird family who lives next door. You guys leave, or I'm gonna touch you with the worm. I warned you, old man.
Like, I also like that the weird circular symbol is really crazy looking, with a bunch of holes in it. And it reminds me of the weird drawings that they did in Noroi, where it was just circles interconnected by things. And it kind of brings it together with the whole leech concept, because it's like a circular thing with holes that almost looks like a bite mark on them.
Thank you, leech man who killed the shamans.
Say what you will. The dude has very consistent motifs.
I can appreciate it. With each movie I watch, I see the connection and it all makes sense.
Dude, I'm going to say it like a million times. This is why I want to rewatch Sadako vs. Kayako, because I'm still going to think it's a dog shit Ju-on movie. I still think it's going to be a dog shit Ring movie. And, like, I still think it's incredibly arrogant to redo the tape from The Ring with your own. But when it comes to, like, the last bit of the movie where, like, the shamans kind of show up, you definitely see, like, oh, this is definitely a Koji Shirashi movie. And if you want to see cool shamans fighting monsters that they can't possibly win against, it's like, this is a fantastic movie.
Just had to have been named Koji Shirashi's Crazy Ghost Fight Mega Battle.
Featuring Sadako and Kayako.
Just go full Kamen Rider movie.
I feel like if you look at it with the lens of, like, him taking from folklore to create his own, you know, eldritch abominations that, like, no, he's just taking from the folklore of Kadako and of you know what I mean?
Yeah.
He's taking from modern folklore to create this story.
I mean, there are some things, though, that I can't forgive. Remember that time one character was going to kill themselves and Sadako showed up and was like, nah, 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 you die when I say you die.
Life is a cruel mistress.
It's like, I don't think she gives a shit. I remember the moment you decided this movie was a 10 out of 10 movie, Pat.
Oh, yeah. Like, going through the whole movie, 9 out of 10, I was enjoying myself. And then Neo just started slapping this woman with a picture, with a photo.
Like she's tied to a chair.
Oh, no, no, let me give the context. Okay. It's like the mom and her daughter are both just tied to chairs, and he's interrogating them going, who are the big people in this picture? And he's like talking to the daughter. She's like, this is this, and this is, I don't know who that is. And then he's like, I'm going to exorcise the worm demon out of you. Who is this? Oh, it's mom. Then who is this woman in the seat across from you? And then he starts slapping her with the photo saying, who are you? Where is she?
It's like, I'm her mother. Slaps her with photo. It's like, no, 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 we're way past that point.
Instantly became a 10 out of 10 movie. It was probably because I watched O's. That was the most arrogant thing you could do.
There's just so many, like, little details. But also, the worms dancing in the air seemed very friendly. I could see why you joined that cult.
Yeah. I was like, Wiggly boys, those are friends. Like,
they just want to hang out.
Inside of you. And summon their terrible god.
I feel like there's a sequel to this movie that just never exists.
Isn't there other movies in the cult universe by other directors?
Yeah, that's something that I heard. Is that like...
But I needed a sequel where it was Neo fighting the god.
Maybe he'll be back for the TV show he's doing.
What was it?
Yeah, the TV show is wild. Like, you guys mind if I give the synopsis of the TV show real quick?
There's
a TV show.
Yeah, there's going to be a TV show.
Oh, there's going to be. Okay. Yeah, yeah.
It's slated for a 2022 release.
Okay, I'm down.
So, essentially the premise is Koji Shirashi, as himself, hears rumors about this forest that's like a connection to other worlds and stuff. And he's going to like document that stuff.
Also, the show is called Welcome to the Occult Forest.
Yes.
We can never escape.
And he meets a woman who tells him, I have experienced all the things that have happened in your movies. So now it's like, oh, well, we definitely need to investigate this. Mm-hmm. Which, this kind of feels like a victory lap for this man. I'm looking forward to watching this, because it's either going to be a train wreck or it's going to be a 10 out of 10, and I don't think it's going to be anywhere in between.
Man, I'm not going to dox our friend, so I'm going to call him Matt.
Oh, dude, the ectoplasm. So, the things that scare me about this dude's work isn't the actual monsters. It's like the weird concepts and the feeling that something's always around you. But Matt is just, like, actually worried about ectoplasmic worms.
That was great. When he saw Neo pull off his glove, he's like, I thought I was going to see Ankh's Gauntlet. His arm was just going to fly.
He was telling me he was laying awake at night, Monday night, after we watched Cult. And I was just like, I have to think about something other than worms. And then he just kept thinking about the movie. And he has like a Japanese-style futon, so he just lays on the ground. So he's just laying on the hard ground, and he's like, I just felt this weird feeling go up in my spine, and I'm like, oh no, they have me.
Oh man, Matt's great. He hates horror movies, but now he can't stop watching them with us.
Yeah, he's one of those people who hates horror movies, but secretly loves them. I think he loves being afraid.
I think he likes the weird stories going on topics. We're showing him some weird, obscure shit.
Yeah, I remember showing him Ju-on, and he was just talking about how, like, shitty his life was for 2 weeks. Because it's like, anytime he hears a cat meow or he's in the dark, he's just like, oh, fuck no. Man, thank you, Matt, for watching these horror movies with us.
See, he has to live them. Just live next to a cemetery, it enhances everything.
Fuck that.
Sometimes when you drive in the morning, there's just a nice mist, and you really can't see in front of you. It's that season.
Anything can happen.
Oh, you want to go on a cemetery adventure at midnight?
I mean...
I know how to get us in.
No, but not for, like, spooky reasons. I just don't want to, like, disrespect cemeteries. But I am down for us, like, checking out, like, a haunted house, or like...
Is it doxing ourselves if we say we live next to one of those haunted cemeteries?
No, I think that's a point of pride.
So what's the big...
Because it's a big enough area.
Yeah, what's the big, like, cemetery that we live next to?
Resurrection?
No, the super haunted one from, like, the 1800s. There's literally one where they don't let people go in on Halloween because people do dumb shit there, and there's actually, like, ghost sightings and stuff.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
Don't curse people. Curses are bad. Because they backfire every time. I've watched enough Japanese movies.
No regular bombs, no demon bombs.
Oh yeah, Rob, how did you feel about the concept being there's a cult who lives next door?
Honestly, I'm trying not to think about... They're a Jesus cult. I'm not too worried about demon bombs.
How do you know? Yeah, they're throwing love bombs.
Well, typically Jesus cults only do bad things to their own members. Typically.
Do you hear screaming?
I mean...
And women.
And women. I mean, that's... I was about to get really political there, but...
I think you just never have to record any video where you are in frame and a window on a cult building is also in frame.
Yeah, absolutely not. No one ever record me in my house. Because the moment I see it and someone's just looking out the window at me is the moment I have to move. I will fucking move into your couch.
Oh, you don't want to accidentally take a picture and just see people staring back?
Yeah, absolutely. I'm one of those people that, like, I'd be perfectly fine being haunted as fuck as long as I never realize it.
Oh.
It's like... Like, as long as I don't see shit, it's like you could be, as many ghosts can be around me as they want, as long as they're just doing their own thing and have nothing to do with me. I don't want to see shit in the mirror. I don't want, like, faces in the fucking window. It's like, dude, that's rude. I'm just...
So the real question is, after watching all these movies, have you gone through your old, like, photo albums to see if there's any weird faces in the background?
That's the cool thing. When your extended family is kind of garbage, you don't have photo albums. So I don't have to worry about that.
So that's both good and bad.
We got online photos now.
Have you tried looking through them for faces?
Yeah, but, okay, this can lead us to... Magnus Archives. You need those old photos.
You are 100% correct. And no, absolutely not. If there is a not them, I don't want to know. Because the thing is, if you don't know, typically they leave you alone. They look for the people who know.
No, yeah.
So, moving on with our adventure through the Magnus Archives, we're at the second half of season 2, episodes 61 through 80, and this... Yeah, this part of the series has one of my favorite lines, where it's like, I think you need a door.
What the John doing?
The John is doing supplementals.
We're finally at the end of the supplemental season, where John is literally losing his mind.
No, that's where he collects his thoughts and goes, wait, I was right to be paranoid.
Man, the first time I listened to this series, I was like, why does Daisy not like John so much? And I realized, like, hard shoulder, you really get the idea that something weird is going on, because Daisy's kind of standoffish and doesn't want to answer questions. But after John's like, would you like to give a statement? She's like, yeah, fuck it, I'll do it. And, like, it's just very clipped, and it's coming out of her, and there's weird emotional inflection that isn't there when she's actually talking in dialogue without giving a statement. Mm-hmm. And there's just these really subtle things that give you the idea that it's almost like it's being drawn out of her. Spooky. And that's like the first episode. That's just the first episode of the second half. Hard shoulder. It's like, hey, how did your partner die? Mm-hmm. He walked into a box, and I never saw him again.
Remember the box from, like, episode 5?
No, it was episode 2.
Or episode... Same box.
Same box.
It's the first hint that mayhaps John has some powers that he can play with.
But also, it's him slowly starting to believe, man, there's a box out there that eats people. It's like, yeah, this... He just started walking into the box underground somehow through this van.
Yeah, to find out what's in the box.
And then we get to meet, you know, Jürgen Leitner this season.
Who finally we can talk about the entities.
So yeah, now if you're, like, following along with us, now we can actually talk pretty openly about the fears. Which really is the meat and potatoes of this series.
It's great too, because once you've exposed yourself to the Magnus Archives, when you look at any other piece of horror media, you're like, oh, it's this entity, you know?
We need to make another entity just called Worms.
I mean, that's kind of the Corruption.
It's like Corruption Spiral had, like, a baby.
Yeah.
Probably already exists. Probably. Your ideas aren't original.
So what were your, some of your guys' like favorite episodes from the stretch? Because there are some good ones.
I'm going to immediately throw out Binary.
Mm-hmm.
That's one of my favorites for both the statement of, you know, the whole mind melding into the computer and, oh, pain. Transhumanists, have you ever thought about if you put your brain in a computer, it hurting the brain? And then also for the supplemental, because that's the episode where we find out that Tim can't quit.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Tim can't quit and John can't fire him.
Mm-hmm.
Somehow they're just trapped here.
There's definitely a line where the people working in the archive care about each other, but man, do they hate each other.
Yeah, I do think there is a bit of like a weird version of like Stockholm syndrome of like, well, we're all stuck together, so let's try to make the best of this. Doesn't, you know,
yeah,
it doesn't help that I think most of the people in here are in here for their own their own ends. I don't want to say too much, but
I mean, we'll quickly find out more about Tim in season 3.
It's like everybody, we get
a lot of his story.
It's like everybody joined the archive for a reason, more or less.
All right. I'm going to say right now, my favorite episode of this stretch, hands down, is Fatigue. I just love the idea of, hey, man, I can't sleep, and Michael is low-key just fucking with me. Like, he's not even doing all that much. He's just like, how you doing, buddy?
Yeah.
Not sleeping still? And just loving every second of it.
Let's go to bed.
I also like that, because I know, like, in the supplemental podcast stuff, they mentioned that, like, John did not sleep for days to write that episode, because he wanted it to be disjointed and, like, fatigue-worn, and, like, he went the extra mile for that one. And you don't have to suffer to make your art, but when you do, it's kind of like adding that, like, little extra pepper on the soup. Just give that little extra flavor.
He did the build strat of staying up all night playing Monster Hunter to look completely broken the next day.
Yep. I'm also going to cheat and say my second favorite was Police Lights. Because I feel like that was that's like one of the first times where we get a cool kind of current event situation that's kind of a big deal for the overall shape of the world. And we don't really understand how big of a moment that was for like as a game changer.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Basira mentions, like, we got a random tip about the disappearance. And it's like, clearly something was at play to take down the major avatar for, you know, the dark.
Mm.
Someone wanted Maxwell Rayner out of the picture. And I wonder who it could be.
Yeah, it could even be you.
It could be.
And another episode in this stretch that's like, it has more significance than you would realize is, Thought of the Day, because that's when we get Annabelle Kane,
mm-hmm.
and, like, her weird fucky-wucky spider stuff.
It's like, hey, we're going to put you in a room, and we're going to have a bunch of people just stare at you and flash things they're afraid of at you. It's like, man, these guys don't understand that fear is interwoven with the fabric of their universe, and nothing good can come of that study.
I feel like even if that isn't the case, what are you, like, you think you sound like the good guys here? Like,
hey, fear is a very strong emotion. So, like, if I'm, like, a Chunie and I'm trying to prove that psychic powers are real, that's probably how I'd do it. How about you, Pat? What was like, your favorite episode in the stretch?
Oh, I like the double feature of, was it the kind mother and a distant cousin? You're not my fucking mom. It's like, who is this? Who has the power to, like, bend reality around them? To, like, make everybody except one person or, you know, a handful of people just not see the difference?
Yeah, the cousin one really got... It still gets to me. Because the idea of being the only person in your family to realize that that person is not right, and then have them come to your house... And just have them sit on the couch.
Yeah, just hang out with you. Hey, cousin. But that also, we also in that episode got the explanation of how the entity ended up in the cupboard. Or not, was at the table. The table. Yeah. It's like, yeah, just some dude just showed up and went, yo, you need that taken care of? Just hide in your room all day.
Battlar Deckard. That's a name we probably won't hear again. Don't worry about it.
Yeah, and then these two cockney dudes just took it and put it in a van.
You know, that's probably his fault for running out of the house, because Adelar probably couldn't move the table by himself. That's probably the only... He probably was like, I'm going to go leave and look for this guy, because I need his help with the table. And then Breakin' and Hope was just like, yeah, no, I'm grabbing this.
That was a clusterfuck in that house, I'm not going to lie.
Yeah.
And then wasn't that also... Was that the same episode or the episode before that you got John going in to fucking destroy the table?
It's like, okay, guys.
Okay, everybody, you can go home early. I'm feeling sick. And it's like, okay, boss, we got this. He's up to some sussy shit.
It's like Martin's like, are you sure? And Tim's like, yep, I'm going home. How about you, Jimmy?
I think all my favorite ones are pretty much set already. Probably be like police lights. Just... fighting. Tactical thing currently going on that is just like, oh man, there's a lot that's probably gonna happen because of this.
Yeah. Well, I like that the episode before you get the call from Basira. It's like, hey, we're raiding a dude named Max von Rainer. What do I need? And John's just like, oh fuck, that guy.
Lots of flashlights.
Bring torches. A bunch of, and that saved so many people.
Yeah.
Like, but she was also pissed because the normal guy that went in with her, they kind of just covered up as like a gang, or was it like just a regular shooting or whatever?
Oh, they made him out like to be dirty.
Yeah, it was she's like, I'm done with this shit. Here's a bunch of tapes. I'm done. Oh, that was great. It's like, I'm quitting the police force. Okay, but what about the tapes? And then she just got angry at him. It's like, that's what you care about in this moment.
I also think it's cool that the Dark has the inherent ability to possess other people within them, because you know you're kind of overshadowing them in some way, and you're dyeing them in your color. Like, oh, I think conceptually it makes sense that like the man who is Maxwell Rainer is a body snatcher.
It reminds me of, like, whenever I think about the Dark, it reminds me of this, like, Tumblr post I saw that was like, one day I'm gonna take out the sun and then none of you will see. None of you will fucking see.
See, I too have watched Naruto.
They just want the infinite Tsukiyomi with their... Boy, I almost spoiled something.
No, Rob, the dude that literally controls people's shadows.
Ah, yes.
So anyway, I'm you now.
I also want to give an honorary mention to Burning Desire, because it is one of like the fan favorite episodes of like, does this really matter? Kind of, but it's also just cute of like this guy who's like, you clearly are some kind of weird supernatural entity being, but I still love you, you know? I want to hold your hand. I want to give you a kiss, even though it's going to, like, burn me, you know?
I think it's an important episode because it gives you a periphery of multiple people who have been kind of brought up in the past, because you get, like, their descriptions and stuff, and you see that there's kind of this unified front, or unified, in quotations, front with them. It also introduces you to a character that we're going to have a very close encounter with next season.
Mm-hmm. I guess it also adds humanity back to these people, because they're still technically regular people. They're kind of just...
kind of.
Well, some of them want to still be regular people that were just either born or trapped into the way they are now. And it's like, if I could just trade this in to be a regular person again, I would in a heartbeat.
Yeah, because it's the first time that Agnes really gets to interact with a person who doesn't only see her for this power. They, like, see her for a person.
Like, someone who doesn't just idolize her, just goes like, wait, that's a pretty girl I want to talk to.
So you a cutie.
What do you mean I'm cute?
Let's go hang out in the park in the middle of autumn.
It's awfully warm here. I think I also enjoyed the episode where it was just the mummy.
Oh, yeah.
It's just like, there's nothing here to make money off of, but also, why is there a mummy walking around? And why is it trying to kill itself? It can't die.
It took my knife. and plunged it into its chest over and over again.
But also,
and then it made sounds that almost sounded like sobbing.
And that's also another one of those death game guys that we keep meeting.
It's like, I like that the end, like, when it does interact with people, it fucks with the idea that you can't die. And that's the fear that it hits them with. And it's like, that is fucking genius.
But the messed up part in this was the Egyptians actually put it through, like, actually removing its organs, drying it out completely, which probably was complete suffering for months. And they were just like, we need to lock this thing up. It does not want to die. And it also perverts dying in Egyptian culture. Because dying, like, and passing on into afterlife is a journey.
They probably mummified it alive as a mercy. They probably thought, this will definitely kill it and let it move on to the afterlife.
Well, the greatest disgrace in their culture was not being able to pass on.
Well, that's that's also why there was no, like, trinkets or anything there. Because if you're not going to go to the afterlife, why would we give you anything to take with you to the afterlife?
Which is great and fun. But also, this is a... this dude's just been chilling here for, like, who knows how many thousands of years. It's like, please, someone, play some craps with me or something.
That was, like, the most social interaction that dude had in, like, literally eons. And then he immediately tries to kill himself.
It was like...
I feel that.
Just play one game of Yahtzee with me, please.
just fucking play Yahtzee with me.
Just roll the dice. Whoever rolls higher wins, please. Just anything. It's okay. The fun thing is, I'm pretty sure the Egyptian government will eventually find that guy.
Let's hope not. So I think the big thing for episode 80, because, you know, we kind of get the thing wide open. We know there's entities. We get to meet Jürgen Leitner and hear, you know, how his ill-conceived library got put together. But I think the most important thing is that now we have 100% confirmation that Elias is a villain.
Daddy Elias.
This man is such a villain that he was able to shoot Gertrude Robertson 3 times while making it sound like 1.
Because who else did we get in here? We got Melanie King again. Because she went to go find some ghosts. She's not respected by the ghost hunting community anymore. And now she's actually hunting real ghosts that are hurting her.
That's why she got rejected.
Also being gaslit about Sasha.
I mean, not even on accident. Like, John's is like, I'm not gaslighting you.
He was so confused.
I like that John and Melanie are, like, cursed to never have a civil relationship, because every time they get on a mutual understanding, something weird happens and they just assume the worst about each other. Mm-hmm. Wait, I genuinely don't know what you're talking about. And he's like, how are you going to gaslight me after I told you that my entire community has rejected me? Mm-hmm. And we sat down and had this pleasant conversation. I'm going to India now.
I'm going to India to find some ghosts. If I don't come back, I was killed by ghosts. And was it the episode before that?
Yeah.
We got the Michael Crew episode. It's like, yes, my brother's afraid of heights, and now he's fucking gone.
Hey, man, he'll get to the end of the ladder eventually, I'm sure.
No. All right, they did the snake eater thing.
It's just like, yeah, my brother just disappeared.
I don't know, that episode fills me with anxiety for different reasons. Just, like, finding out that, like, someone you live with, like, has this resentment to you to the point where they'll plan their entire vacation around, like, fucking with you. It's like, man, I hope I never get that. I'm fucking obnoxious. Like,
we'll see.
Just don't bum on someone's couch for 6 months.
Well, I think the problem wasn't even the bumming on the couch. I think it was doing something that got yourself fired in, like, the dumbest possible way in the middle of, like, planning this hundreds of dollars fucking vacation.
Really jazzing it up.
Like, if you're planning this vacation...
that was definitely a jazz move. You know what? I think that episode would make a great episode of Peep Show.
The crossover we never knew we needed.
It's amazing the percentage of this show is people telling John, I thought you'd be better. Next time, we're going to be doing something a little different. I don't really have a theme for my picks, so I'm going to say the theme is companion pieces.
It's going to be a multimedia adventure.
So, the first thing we're going to be doing is we're going to be watching one of my personal favorites, The Cabinet of Dr. Caligari. And then we're also just going to watch... Rob Zombie's Living Dead Girl. music video, because I also just really like the show people. This is literally just that movie. And our second piece is we're going to actually be listening to an album. It's a concept album by King Diamond, and we're going to be watching, we're going to be listening to The Puppet Master, which is honestly one of my favorite Christmas time treats. So it makes sense that we're listening to it in the middle of summer. And the companion piece for that is, King released a very, very cheesy video of him narrating the actual story behind the album. And I feel like that'll just be really fun to just experience together.
I'm excited to go on this adventure with you. And I'm also excited to stay spooky.
Ooh. All right. This has been Spooky Points Articulated. You can send us an email at zeropointsarticulated@gmail.com. And you can follow us on the web at zeropointsarticulated.com.
We hope you guys enjoyed this week's episode. We'll be back with more content.
Spooky Points Articulated is distributed by Anchor, audio engineering and co-produced by James Morales, edited and co-produced by Robert Marchant, and along with The Things That Go Bump in the Night, Patrick Sarkowski, and Amy Lopresti.